Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
It was vital, man. Honestly, coming all the way out here from South Carolina, you know, really never really been out of this state, you know, for much of my life. So coming all the way out here to Vegas, you know, everything new, having Hunter here for support, man, just a familiar face from back home. He helped me so much just mentally, you know, you get a little homesick and you just got a guy right there that kind of understands you, man. That's huge.
That's Bryan Edwards. The hit, one of the hits. There's been many hits. Trust me when I say that, of Raiders camp so far. A lot of guys, at least early on through the first week of practice or the first week of training camp, that you wanted to see take steps forward are taking steps forward. Henry Ruggs looks better than he did last year. Should be the case going into year two. As high of a draft pick as he was, as much talent as he has, as much work as he put into it in the offseason, which is obvious by anybody you talk to, you just have to look at Henry to realize that dude hit the weight room. That dude listened to his nutritionist. That dude worked on parts of his game that were holding him back last year. So it's only natural that he should be better. It would have been almost unacceptable if he wasn't. On the other hand, it's still good to report, if you're a Raider fan, or to hear that Henry Ruggs seems to be on target, seems to be on the right path. That's all you can hope for. And now it has to translate onto the field. Bryan Edwards. Bryan Edwards was a hit of camp last year. We were writing about Bryan Edwards, like, whoa, okay, this guy's got the size, this guy's got the catch radius, this guy's got enough speed, this guy's tough. You saw it translate into practice when Derek Carr went his way, and as Derek Carr spoke about today, he was going his way, even when, you know, like he would make sure that on Edwards' reps, that he was the one that was throwing it to him. Sometimes it's like a, you know, When you're out on the quarterback throwing to the wide receiver, you know, when they're doing those reps, it's sometimes happenstance who you're working with. Well, because, you know, the wide receivers are getting their work in, the quarterbacks are getting their work in, making all their throws, whatever those throws might be. But Derek Carr made it a point to make sure that he was throwing when it was Bryan Edwards's rep. And he was doing that for future purposes. He knew that Bryan Edwards probably wasn't going to be a big part of the offense in general, but he knew that eventually he would. So he wanted to get time and task done now, like establish that right now, so that for future use, it was going to come in handy, and it certainly has now. So there were a lot of times last year where Derek Carr made sure to be lined up with Bryan Edwards so that he was thrown to Bryan Edwards and that they were intuitively building that chemistry, building that trust, building the timing and all of those good things. Now, here's the thing. Bryan Edwards was on target to push his way into a fairly decent role last year, but then he got hurt. If you remember, third game of the year against the New England Patriots, I was there in New England. He got dragged down from behind. I cringed when it happened. It looked like he hurt the leg seriously. It was just a dangerous tackle. They didn't throw the flag for horse collar. They could have easily done that and been justified in doing so. But the point is, he got hurt. Bryan Edwards got hurt. It was a knee and it was an ankle. And from that moment on, he's working his way back into the swing of things. And we've talked about this so many times. When you're a rookie, you're just trying to keep up as it is, all right? And you're trying to keep up with the train. The train has left the station. And when you get hurt, you have to step off that train for a little while to go mend yourself and get ready and get fixed and all those good things. But that train, it doesn't stop. It keeps chugging down the line, down the tracks. And so then when you come back, which he did, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks later or so, now he's got to try to jump back onto the train. Have you ever seen, you know, those comedies where the guy's running down the train and trying to get on the train, trying to jump back on the train, and somebody might be reaching out to help him get on the train? You know, we've all seen that in the movies or on TV. Ha, ha, ha. Well, it's hard to get back on a train that's moving, right? Sometimes it's impossible. But that NFL train doesn't stop for rookies or anybody else that gets hurt and has to go off to the side for a little bit and work on their own and to get back. So imagine being, that happens for veterans too, but imagine now being a rookie that, you know, you're trying to catch up, you're trying to play catch up. And in Brian's case, and this was the case for Henry Ruggs too, Henry Ruggs got hurt in the first game of the year. And so, you know, when they're trying to play catch up and they're not even necessarily 100% healthy, because you're just trying to get back as quickly as you can. You're probably not going to be 100%. You're just as good as you possibly can be. And you're begging the training staff, the coaches, I'm good. Please let me back in. The training staff's not yet. I need to see what I need to see. You need to check off all the boxes before I'm going to sign off on that. So the minute he does, it doesn't mean you're 100% good in terms of the health. You're just good enough. So you've got that in the back of your mind, too, as you're trying to play catch-up. And sometimes it just takes a long time. And in Brian Edwards' case, it didn't quite happen as quickly as he would have hoped, as quickly as the Raiders would have hoped. There were a lot of reasons why. He wasn't completely healthy. He suffered the setback in terms of, you know, keeping up with things. Derek Carr is going to be looking in different directions. You know, the offense was moving in another direction. It had, not that it moved on from Brian Edwards, but it had established a rhythm. It had established some you know, guys like Nelson Aguilar had made a big step forward. So he's playing catch up, trying to fit in where he could. And it was frustrating for Brian Edwards, because he's used to being the go-to guy at South Carolina. Come on, wherever Brian Edwards has been, he's the guy that the offense or that the passing game is going to be built around. Well, now he's trying to fit in where he can. He's not completely healthy. He's playing a mental catch-up a little bit. He's trying to earn the trust of Derek Carr. He's trying to earn the trust of John Gruden, who calls the plays. It's tough. It's not the easiest thing in the world. This was an established veteran who got hurt, came back, and Derek Carr is like, hurry. Like, if Darren Waller gets hurt right now, and actually he is hurt right now, that's a perfect example. When he gets back, there's not going to be any sort of transition. If he's good to go, everything is going to be fine. He knows the offense like the back of his hand. Derek Carr knows him. There's a trust factor. There's a confidence. There's a chemistry. He's going to fit right back in because it's Darren Waller. He's already established. That wasn't the case, obviously, for Brian Edwards last year. He had to try to figure out a way to kind of get back into the flow and the confidence level and all of that with the quarterback, with the coach. It's just almost overwhelming, and it's the cards are stacked against you in that regard as a rookie. And let's not forget, Derek Carr and Brian Edwards didn't even have a chance to build a foundation in the offseason. The offseason was kaput because of COVID-19. So, and I talked to Brian about this, about the fact that, you know, that frustration of trying to get back into the swing of things when the train is moving down the train tracks. But the importance also that he finally found his way. He finally found his way back. It wasn't until the last game of the year. But I remember I was there in Denver and he had a nice game, 2 touchdown receptions. He finished strong. And I asked him, was that important for you? And he's like, absolutely. It was important because it vaulted me into the offseason. I mean, he would have gone into the offseason ready to get back to work regardless. But when you finish with a big game, and it was a big game for him, it was, you know, he finally kind of got back into the swing of things and was a factor in a win, made a couple of really nice catches, scored a couple of touchdowns. It was a nice day, nice night. For Brian Edwards, and it gave him the confidence now, like, whew, all right, man, that was a challenge. That was a struggle trying to figure it all out, find my way. I'm overcoming injuries. I'm learning a new playbook. I'm trying to establish trust with a new quarterback and a new coaching staff. And it was a struggle at times, and there were down moments and frustrations and doubt. But at the very end, just when it was about ready to finish up and wrap up, he finished on a strong note. It was so important mentally for him to be able to go into the offseason knowing, like, you know, I found my way back, and it's still possible, and that's what I am capable of doing. Now I want to do it more and more and more and more, and I think that the strong offseason that he had, and talking to Bryan Edwards, and again, this goes back to our point of what we talked about yesterday. Where did Bryan Edwards go? He stayed put. Yes, he went back home to South Carolina for a little while. You're going to do that. You know, you need time off. Everybody needs some time off. Go visit with the family, with the friends. He went back to South Carolina, hooked up with his old coaches, some former teammates, trying to, you know, be a light for them, as he talked about, you know, being this, you know, hey, that's Bryan Edwards, NFL player now. He's one of us. You know, if he could do it, we could do it type thing. So he was a role model back at campus at South Carolina, but predominantly, for the most part, he stayed right here in Las Vegas, which he talked about kind of falling in love with this area and becoming a member of this community. He bought a house. He's becoming an adult. This is now his city. He knows this is his place of employment. This is where he wants to be. And most important of all, he got a chance to go to the facility day in and day out with everybody else that was out there. And we've talked and talked and talked about how that facility here in Henderson was kind of a magnet for all the players that stayed put here in Las Vegas, and a place where they went on a daily basis, almost pushing each other, challenging each other, encouraging each other, building bonds. What did I tell you about that conversation with Alec Ingold right after OTAs, right after the minicamp? And they had put some work in for two months. They deserved, you know, some time off before training camp. Hey, man, you know, enjoy your time off. What time off? There's no time off, Vinny. We're going to work the next 40 days harder than we worked the past 8 months or the past 2 months. You can count on that. There's no days off. And I was like, okay, you know, good, you know, enjoy it regardless. And without a doubt, they took advantage, a whole group of them, by staying put here in Las Vegas and getting to work over at the facility in Henderson. It's going to be a big bonus moving forward that, as John Gruden spoke about, you know, you're in a state now, there's no state tax, it's affordable to live here year-round. All love to the Bay Area. I worked in Los Angeles for many years. That wasn't always the case. A lot of Ram players, you know, had to move out of town or go back home where it was, you know, cheaper to live or more cost effective to live, because Los Angeles had priced even them out, making the money that they'd make. But, you know, when you counter taxes, when you factor in taxes and everything else, fee for your agent, all of that stuff, that money goes pretty quickly. And, you know, you're like, hey, where'd my paycheck go? Where's all my money going? You know, I'm living here in California where it's very expensive to live. I got to go home where, you know, for the 6 months that I'm home and just stay put there and be able to put some money away. I always tell this story when I was covering the Rams. I was talking to one of their young offensive linemen, Brian Allen, and he was a rookie from Michigan State. We're talking in the locker room one day. It's about maybe a third of the way into the season, his rookie season. I go, hey, have you found a place? Where are you living? Yeah, I'm in Woodland Hills. Oh, cool. Woodland Hills, you know, it's a nice city in the San Fernando Valley. You know, it's not in the heart of Los Angeles, but it's part of Los Angeles County, and it's a great area. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, do you have any roommates? He goes, oh, yeah, you know, hey, you're in L.A., you got to get some roommates. I go, who are your roommates? And he started pointing right here. We're in the locker room, and he's pointing out, like, four teammates. So it was five rookie players, a couple offensive linemen, some other position players. It was the cost of living was like that for those rookies. Now, granted, Brian Allen was like a fourth round pick, so he's not making bank. He's making money that a lot of people would love to have, but it's still not like necessarily life-changing money. And by the way, it's not guaranteed. You know, he's not one of those type of dudes where he got a big, huge signing bonus, and whatever signing bonus he got, he put away. And in order for those guys to maximize things, they got together and got a house and rented it. In Los Angeles, that was the case. I know that was the case for a lot of young Raider players. If I remember correctly, Foster Moreau and Alec Ingold, their rookie years, and maybe somebody else were living near Jack London Square, where it's incredibly expensive to live there just on your own. And I'm not kidding around. It costs a lot of money to get a place in that area. Here in Las Vegas, you can make do. With what they're making, you can make do year-round out here in a nice, nice way. So there's no real reason to want to go live anywhere else, as Brian Edwards talked about. You got to get used to the heat, of course. That is something that, you know, a bit of a challenge, something that you have to deal with. But once you get past that, it's not a bad place to live at all. And there's nice neighborhoods in and around where the facility is, and it's cost effective. And a lot of these players just decided, I'm going to buy my house here. I'm going to live here. And oh, by the way, I've got this beautiful, sparkling, state-of-the-art facility that I could go to at my leisure along with my other teammates and be able to get the necessary work in. That's a huge advantage that the Raiders did not have up in Oakland, not speaking ill will whatsoever about Oakland. But let's be practical here. As John Gruden pointed out, there's a state tax in California, right? There's just, it costs a lot more to live in California when you're talking about rent, when you're talking about you know, mortgages, all of that. So it all plays into it, and it's just more conducive to chemistry building, team bonding. You know, guys are having, remember, you know, hearing Derek Carr talking about the barbecues that he had at his house and bringing all his teammates over there for great barbecues and you know, outings and things like that. Derek Carr talking about that in Oakland, and not to talk badly about Oakland at all, but he's like, you know, everyone lived an hour away or an hour and a half away, literally. That's often what was the case in order to find some place that was affordable or someplace that was super nice away from the facility. You had to go a long distance. And sometimes it wasn't necessarily the long distance. It was just the traffic was so bad that it took you an hour and a half to get where you wanted to go. Here, everything, the furthest you're away from anybody is about 35 minutes. That's tops. Normally, it's just minutes away from you know, your teammates, your coaches, or where you want to be, or where you want to go, or where you want to go out to eat. So it's just it's the situation is better here for what the Raiders are trying to do, especially a young team, a bunch of guys that haven't gotten that second contract yet, that are still trying to make ends meet, relatively speaking. So I think that being here in Las Vegas, and Brian Edwards talked about it, I stayed here. I stayed here. He went out to the parks to throw with Derek Carr. He went to the facility to work on his body and work on, you know, with the strength and conditioning coach. You know, they're able to get out on the field with their strength and conditioning coaches or with each other to throw the ball around. It's in a safe environment. You've got, you know, medical people there just in case something goes awry or you get hurt or whatever. Again, it's just an advantage now that the Raiders have that they didn't have necessarily in Oakland. And you can say that about, you know, some other places across the league where, you know, for other reasons, Green Bay. Yes, Green Bay is highly cost-effective to live, but, you know, guys don't necessarily want to live in Green Bay because you're dealing with unbelievably crazy winters for the months that you're not playing football. Football season ends in January, right, for most teams. Maybe February if you're lucky enough to go to the Super Bowl, but February, March, April, those are pretty darn cold months in those cities. And it doesn't really start warming up until June or so in some of those areas. So you have to take that into account. But I think the Raiders are situated perfectly here in Las Vegas and their practice facility at Henderson for a young team that seems to be kind of bonding together and using this location to work on that or to for their benefit. And that's only going to benefit the team as well. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila and Bahadur.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Yeah, I mean, I guess his abilities and his pedigree speak for itself. Obviously, last year they had a pretty good offense and added me and a few other pieces in free agency in the draft. I feel like he's looking at this offense to continue to that same trajectory into this season. Excited about the way he's using me personally, obviously, but the whole offense is in general with Ford, the Helms, I feel like it's definitely going to really click this year, so I'm excited to see what we accomplish.
That's Raiders running back, new Raiders running back, Kenyon Drake. By the way, you're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Kenyon Drake, really impressed with he's got this cerebral sort of way about him. And I'm noticing that in regards to a lot of these young Raider players, some of the players that they've brought in, Unique Ngakoue, Kenyon Drake, without question, some of the players that they've drafted. The demeanor, we've talked about Alex Leatherwood and sort of the veteran presence that he already has. It's just the way he's wired, and I think that's a great sign moving forward. But, you know, talking to a guy like Kenyon Drake and how he sees the game, how he feels the game, the way he expresses his thoughts about the game, it's just kind of a smart, intelligent, really breath of fresh air way that he looks at things. And Josh Jacobs as well, talking to Josh Jacobs and hearing his thoughts and what he talks about in terms of his teammates, his role. It just feels like the Raiders slowly but surely are bringing good people into the building. And I don't discount that whatsoever. That's something that I know, having been around professional sports as long as I have, and I can go all the way back to the Showtime Los Angeles Lakers, and how important culture is. And John Gruden talked over the weekend when we talked to him about this, or maybe it was when we talked to him yesterday, my days are kind of running together, but he talked about how this culture, the work ethic that he's feeling from this team is as good, if not better, than any he's been around in his entire career. I don't take that lightly because I understand how important it is. I go back to last year, right? When we've talked about this so many times, where how many times did the Raiders, at what point did the Raiders falter most and most frequently, especially defensively? Big games or big time situations, third downs where you got to make the stop, get the ball back to Derek Carr, let him do his thing, let him extend the lead. Maybe they're up by 7, give him the ball back, try to get it up to 14. A third and 14, just get him off the field, get the ball to Derek Carr. When were the Raiders most disconnected? Those moments. Late game situations, looking disconnected, disorganized sometimes. And that doesn't necessarily, when I say culture, culture could take many types of directions. There's just a culture of accountability, of intelligence, of a culture that sort of encourages or increases the likelihood of being able to make plays when plays are need to be made. A lot of that is confidence. A lot of that is building a body of work where you believe in yourself the most in those situations. I felt like last year the Raiders believed in themselves, especially on defense, least in those moments. And they played like it. When you don't believe in your ability to make that play or to stand up to that challenge, that's going to affect the way you see things, the way you play, the way you react. And so that culture of being your best when nothing less than your best is required, it almost can't happen because maybe you're not sure of your assignment. Maybe you're not sure of the guy next to you that he's going to get the job done or be where he's supposed to be. And there's doubt that starts getting, creeping in. Culture, a good culture can be how your confidence is displayed and how confident you are. And I look at what the Raiders are building, who they're bringing into this building, and who they're kind of building this thing around. And from Derek Carr, Kenyon Drake, Unique Ngakoue, Richie Incognito, who has kind of a way about him himself. It might be a little bit, get off my lawn type of old dude type of a mentality, but you know, he does it with a smile and a way where I think that other guys kind of like and react well to. You know, you've got Darren Waller, who, you know, is one of those, he's just a dude that gets it in a lot of different ways and articulate and, you know, has a way about him and a great demeanor. Derek Carr talks about Darren Waller being the least or the superstar with the least amount of ego that he's ever been around. The big star that with the least amount of ego. And that's important because other people see that. If there's nobody on this team that has a right to kind of act like, you know, he's the big dog in town and on the team and in the room, then Darren Waller. There's nobody that has put up the numbers that Darren Waller has these last couple of years. And yet he's, you know, as humble as it gets. And that, you know, other people pick up on that. And if they're like, if I'm not doing those type of numbers, if I'm not putting up those kind of numbers, then I have no right to have any kind of an ego right now, any kind of an unhealthy ego, I should say. I think ego is important because it reflects some sort of a belief in yourself. And you have to have that belief in yourself to succeed at this level, because if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will. And B, you're going to play like you don't believe in yourself. And that's the last thing that you want. But you know, you listen to somebody like Kenyon Drake and how much he gets it and how he sees it. It really is kind of a breath of fresh air. And it's why I wanted to talk to him about, you know, he's played for a number of different, in a number of different systems, for a number of different coaches, and a number of different great play callers. But, you know, his thoughts on like playing with John Gruden. John Gruden has always had this mad scientist type persona, you know. He's the guy that you can picture, you know, working late into the night in his lab drawing up plays. And he literally does. He literally does do that. And, you know, players will talk about, you know, when they get in the building on a game week to see what he's installing and what he's putting in and the new plays that he's putting in. And you know, they're like, whoa, coach got after it on the, you know, drawing up these plays. The Rams used to do that too. There would be big smiles on faces of like Robert Woods, you know, and Cooper Kupp because Sean McVay was drawing up ways for them to shine that week. And so hearing Kenyon Drake today talk about, you know, now playing for John Gruden and everything that John Gruden brings to the table, it's really interesting. But I just like the vibe. I like when you look at this team, we talked about it yesterday, how the 2019 group is kind of taking ownership of this team in terms of the heartbeat, in terms of the kind of the soul of the team. Yeah, Derek Carr is the face of the franchise, and rightfully so. And you know, he's the out front personification of these Raiders. That's often the case with the quarterback. But right below that, there's a heartbeat. You know, there's a bloodstream, and you have to have a foundation. There's a group that kind of is that. That takes that role of a team, and if it's not good, and if it's disjointed, and it's weak-minded, or it's not connected, then that's going to show. And there's going to be splinters, and there's going to be, you know, guys are going to be going there in different ways, and that doesn't bode well for winning. But when this 2019 group came onto the scene and promised to themselves, to each other, in group chats, to each other, face-to-face. Like, we're going to be the reason this thing gets turned around or this thing gets restored. We're going to build that bridge that delivers the Raiders back to prominence. We're going to be that bridge. And they challenged each other and pushed each other, whether it was in the offseason, the classroom, the weight room, to have that kind of singular goal. Yeah, each guy had his own journey. Each guy had his own path that they had to take, agenda. You know, everyone has, you know, something that different that they're trying to accomplish for themselves, whether it's to make the team, whether it's to have a great rookie year, win a role, win a spot in the rotation, win a starting job. So you have to think of things as an individual and take care of yourself. But normally, if you do that the right way and with the collective in mind, then you're going to grow as an individual, and the team that you're connected to is going to grow collectively as well. And they, to a man, sort of made that mandate to themselves that, hey, we're going to be the reason why this thing gets turned around. Josh Jacobs, Max Crosby, Cleve Farrell, Trayvon Mullen, Alec Ingold, Foster Moreau, Jonathan Abram, you know, and A.J. Cole. Now Andre James, the starting center. He came in as an undrafted free agent that year as well. Now you're starting to see out on the field how it's kind of manifested itself. These are third-year players. These are no longer wet behind the ear rookie players who are, you know, just trying to kind of find their way. They've established themselves for the most part. I know Jonathan Abram still needs to kind of take a big step forward. He understands that. But this, and there's always improvement. You know, you look at Max Crosby, you look at Cleve Farrell, they're on a constant pursuit to improve individually. That's never going to change. But it's no longer, hey, just happy to be here and just trying to kind of blindly find my way as an NFL player trying to, you know, figure it all out. It's more like, yeah, we're here. This is the standard that we're trying to set. This is the standard that we're going to hold not just each other individually to or that group collectively to, but the whole darn team. They're going to speak for the team in terms of what's expected, what the standard should be. And it's just really cool to see that because this is something that they preordained for themselves. They saw this as their future. And when you look at the makeup of that group, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio, you know, Ohio State came a year later, but, you know, Wisconsin, Alec Ingold, they won 42 games when in his 4 years. That's a lot of football games to win over the course of 10 years. No, they weren't winning national championships in Madison, but they were winning Big Ten championships or challenging for it and playing in big games, playing in Big Ten championship games. Wisconsin, say what you want. It might not be LSU, obviously, where Foster went to, or Alabama or Clemson. They're just not getting that talent year in and year out. But if you're a college football fan and you're not a fan of LSU or, you know, Alabama or Clemson or one of the just the perennial Ohio State, one of the perennial powers, if you're a fan of any other program outside of that, you want to be kind of a Wisconsin. Yeah, you want to get to where Clemson is and Alabama is, but you would take the kind of team and the kind of program that Wisconsin has become. The point being, Alec Ingold sees what a great program looks like from the inside out, understands what it takes to win at that level. And we talked about this yesterday. The principles that go into winning at Division III, Division II, Division I, the SEC, the ACC, the NFL, wherever you're talking about, it's all the same. The principles are the same. It's about dedication. Well, first of all, it's about talent, of course. Development, commitment, dedication, rowing in the same direction, setting your egos aside, creating a standard that you don't deviate from, understanding what it takes, understanding what not to do. That's almost as important as what to do. And, you know, when you come from the programs that a lot of these Raider players have come from, you see what it looks like, you see what it feels like. You don't want anything less than that. So, you know, and when this group came in, of course, the Raiders were 4-12. It wasn't going to happen overnight, and they understood that. They understood that it was going to be a process, but they weren't going to settle for staying the same. They weren't going to settle for just being happy to be here in the NFL and let's just go make some money and try to make some plays and have some fun. No. What they decided amongst themselves and continually to the present time push each other to aspire to be is to turn this into a winning program and not just a fleeting type of a winning, but creating a standard that ensures long-range success that ultimately is going to create a tradition of success. And that's what that 2019 group wants to do. Will they get there? We'll see. But I give them a lot of credit for taking on that challenge when I don't think that everyone is A, capable, or B, willing to do. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila and Vodka.
interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
A little big signing for the Raiders. Somewhat of a big signing. We'll see. But they made it official by signing Gerald McCoy, the defensive tackle, six-time Pro Bowler. Gerald McCoy, he had been in the building earlier today for a workout. Obviously, the Raiders liked what they saw. They brought in Gerald McCoy. I think that, you know, the pedigree, the resume speaks for itself, right? This dude is a guy that's played at a really high level. We'll see what kind of gas he has left in the tank. But it gives the Raiders another piece along that rebuilt defensive line. It'll be kind of interesting to see who gets moved out or pushed aside as a result, because you bring in Gerald McCoy, and he's going to play. If he's got something left in the tank and shows that he's still capable, does that mean Darius Filon? Does it mean Solomon Thomas? Those are the two primary interior backups right now. Does it mean anything for Cleve Farrell? Not quite sure, but I think it would probably be more along the lines of Solomon Thomas and Darius Filon, those two positions. Does that mean maybe Solomon Thomas plays a little bit more outside? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see, but not a bad signing when you could go get a player of that caliber. I know that it's not Gerald McCoy of 6 years ago, but if he's somebody that can give them something, well, then it's a worthwhile pickup. So the Raiders officially sign Gerald McCoy. He was in for a workout, showed him enough to earn himself a contract. Looking forward to see him when he gets on the field. I would imagine there's, you know, all the necessary protocols in place. So not quite sure when we're going to see Gerald McCoy out at practice. But I figure it's going to be sooner rather than later. And you got to figure that it's going to be something that can potentially help the Raiders. And you start looking at that, you know, the rebuilt defensive line. You add somebody like Gerald McCoy to Patterson, Solomon Thomas, Jonathan Hankins, Cleve Farrell, Max Crosby, Carl Nassib. It's already a group that was looking pretty darn good and versatile. And there's a lot of different skill sets and a lot of versatility, a lot of options. Malcolm Kuntz, the rookie from Buffalo. But you bring somebody in that might have a little juice left, and somebody that's played that position at an extremely high level over the course of his career, it's worth taking a look at. And if you get something out of Gerald McCoy, or if you get some semblance of Gerald McCoy, you know, of his former or his previous self, wow, watch out. So an interesting signing for the Raiders. You know, they had a roster spot open. They obviously, I got to check the name of the DeMond. If you get a chance, check out the new offensive lineman that they signed. Obviously, Sam Young retired the other day, leaving them a little bit vulnerable along the offensive line, at least in terms of bodies, camp bodies. By the way, Sam Young, you know, was able to talk to some people with the Raiders last night about Sam Young. Really highly respected guy. I know that, you know, it's. For fans, what are you looking at? You're looking at what happens on the field. Was Sam Young the best tackle? No. Did he serve a purpose for the Raiders? Absolutely. He got pushed into way more time than was what originally expected him to play last year. But because of Trent Brown, DeMond, you got the name?
I'm going to butcher it a little bit because it sounds like a Polynesian last name. Jeremiah Poetasi.
Okay. And former UNLV, right? Or Las Vegas. I think he grew up in Las Vegas, or when you get a chance to look that up, let us know, because he has local ties, no question about that. But back to Sam Young real quick. This will never, ever, ever show up in any box score or any tangible like way that we could put our finger on it or gauge it. But I'll tell you this, and this is what I was told. Sam Young was super, super helpful and super influential in the short time that he was working alongside Alex Leatherwood, the young rookie from Alabama. Sam Young played a real, you know, a friend, somebody that was helping him get acclimated, someone that was helping him with the playbook, showing him kind of how to be a professional. Not that Alex Leatherwood, he obviously gets that side of things, but just getting acclimated in the playbook, in the building, in his new surroundings. It sounds to me, and it was told to me, that Sam Young really helped Alex Leatherwood. It'll never show up in any box score. We get that. We understand that. But in the whole scheme of things, in the short period of time that they were together, Sam Young played a valuable role for Alex Leatherwood. I just think that he got to that point where he probably crossed the finish line, and that was that. It happens. Theo Reddick probably falls into the same category. Like, you know, once you know, when the gas tank is empty, it's empty, and there's no use trying to manufacture gas to get by. If you don't have any more left, you know, as a professional athlete, I'm at the end of my line. It sounded like Theo Reddick, it sounded like Sam Young got to that point. But while they were here, and it's so interesting to hear this, because, and you know, it really drives home the point that we weren't there in the locker room last year, and we still haven't been able to get to the locker room this year. Me and, you know, some of my colleagues, Vic Tafer from The Athletic, and Paul Gutierrez from ESPN, and some of my colleagues over at the Las Vegas Review Journal. When you do this as long as we have, the value in being in the locker room and getting to know these guys off the field, not just as football players, but as people, there's usually long periods of time that we're in there on a daily basis where there's a lot of not really interviewing going on. Sometimes you're waiting around for the guy that you want to talk to, and in the meantime, you're talking to Jared Goff, or you're talking to you know, Aaron Donald, or whoever the case might be, whoever it is that you know, you kind of get to know and develop a relationship for or with. You're shooting, you know, the fat and talking about things, the Laker game the night before, whatever the case might be. But you're also, when you're in there, you can feel the vibe. You can see who other players are kind of gravitating toward. You can see who the you know, is the prankster, is the funny guy, is bringing the guy that's bringing a lot of energy to the room. And it's not always the star player. It's not always, you know, the big time player. Sometimes it's the third string wide receiver who's the life of the party, you know, and bringing a bunch of energy and making everybody laugh and making everybody understand, you know, this is work, but hey, we could still have some fun, right? And so, you know, hearing Josh Jacobs and John Gruden talk about Theo Reddick, you know, and about what they were able to bring. We never saw any of it, and Theo Reddick rarely played, but the role he played in teaching, instructing, taking guys under their wing, being a great spirit, whether it was in the locker room or Zoom meetings or positional group meetings, whatever the case might be, guys have a positive influence. You don't have to be the guy that's carrying the ball 30 times or getting the most catches or throwing the most balls to be able to have a role or play a role on the evolution of a team, the growth of a team, being a glue guy that keeps the team together. It's even if it's just, you know, you get to work, you're dragging a little bit, and there's Theo Reddick or whoever, you know, lighting up the room, full of energy, ready to go. And you're thinking to yourself, man, if Theo, you know, if he can get after it, I'm going to have to get after it too. Like, if he could be in that kind of spirit at that age, after doing it as long as he had, what excuse do I have for not being able to bring it 1,000%? So, you know, that's the kind of role sometimes those guys play that goes unseen. And for us, when you're covering a team, you can easily see that if you're in the locker room all the time. It's not hard to figure out a lot of times who those guys, you know, really are on that team and the role that they play that the fans never get a chance to see. And it's fun sometimes to be able to write about that type of story because we're seeing it. And we're sometimes, you know, your eyes and ears as the fans to say, hey, look, you know, Theo Reddick's got 10 carries this year. But what you don't see is what he's doing behind the scenes with this team and helping these guys along and being, like we talked about, you know, a great influence in the weight room, in the classroom. You know, hey, sit up, you know, telling a guy to act professionally and this is how you do it. You want to stay around with me? You want to make a lifelong pension or a lifetime pension in the NFL? You want to stick around the league for 10 years? I got to look at how long Theo Reddick played, but he's gotten a lot of time in the NFL, and that's going to show eventually when he gets older and those pension checks start coming in and the lifetime medical and all that. Why? It's because he stuck around for a long time, not only just by being a productive player, but by being a good person. So guys like that, unfortunately, we can't tell those stories. We have to hear about them sometimes. It'll be nice to be able to get to a point where we can start seeing it for ourselves and then bringing those stories to you. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila and Bajonar. Want to say thanks to Bill Williamson for spending some time with us in the Huddle. Want to thank all the listeners. Thank you so much. You're why we do this. Want to say thanks to Devon Cotton for making us sound good, keeping us on time. Really appreciate it, Devon. We will be back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. It's a day off for the Raiders, so gotta get a chance to sleep in a little bit tomorrow. But you know how we roll. We're going to be on top of things, and we're going to bring it to you tomorrow in the Huddle, brought to you by Tequila and Bajador, 4 to 6 p.m. We will talk to you guys mañana.
Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.